Blog Talk Radio.
Initiative Radio Network proudly presents the Aunt Kinnear Experience, hosted by Brother Anthony.
Be quiet, man. Can't you see I'm trying to sneak out of here?
What up? Excuse me, I'm a little bit under the weather tonight, so please bear with me. The change of seasons always gets me every year at this time. But other than that, the show must go on. I am good. I'm your host, Ant Canary. Welcome to the Ant Canary Experience. It is October the 3rd, 2017, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. This year is almost over. And I'm sure some of you are probably will be glad when this year is over, because this is like living in a crummy episode of the Twilight Zone. So tonight what we're going to do, we're going to finish up from last week's show. There were some clips that I wanted to play from last week's show. We're going to be talking about Dictator, and I spell Dictator, D-I-C-K, Tater Donald Trump versus the NFL. And this is actually part two. I didn't play the clips from last week because last week we had a very, not heated, but we had some calls and, you know, and my thing on this show, I let it, you know, whoever calls, which is just fine with me. I mean, this is America. Everybody's, you know, has their own opinion and all that good stuff. So I'm good with people calling. Sometimes you have people that call that support Trump. Some people call that don't. I got no problem with that. So we had a extended discussion, which is all good. So tonight I'm going to play you the clips. I've got five clips, and we're going to talk about the reason why Trump all of a sudden doesn't like the NFL, and this goes, and this and a lot of people may not know this, but you know, there were things coming out on social media that, you know, may have given you an idea of what, you know, we're going to talk about tonight. But he's got a history with the football, pro football, and he was in the USFL, but we're going to play those clips in just a second. Also, he had a couple other things going on. He finally made his way to Puerto Rico after 2 weeks and made a hot mess about that issue. And then yesterday, he had a guy kill at least 60 people, injured hundreds in Las Vegas. And you probably already figured this out. Whenever a white guy does a lot of mass killings like this, and there are stats and facts that say that usually when something like this happens, it's always done by a white guy. That the media never calls this guy a terrorist. But if this guy, excuse me, bear with me, my throat's not cooperating. But if this guy was a Muslim, it would have been called Islamic terrorism, and that's all they would have talked about. I mean, you could probably call this Christian just a radical terrorism. I don't know if he's a Christian or not, but basically the same thing. They never want to call these people what they are. They always want to go around it and give these people names and all this BS. But the guy was a terrorist. He had guns on top of guns, which just goes back to the argument that I had that, you know, just because you have a right to have guns does not mean that you need to, everybody needs to have them. And they are calling this like one of the worst shooting mass killings in modern history, whatever that means. But let me remind you, I did a show. If you want to listen to it, you can always go back in archives. The show is entitled Major Race Riots in the U.S. And I think some people tend to forget that this is probably not the worst mass killing in the United States. Let me remind you of a few that we had. 1917, East St. Louis Massacre, between 200 and 700 people dead, mostly black people. 1919, Arkansas Massacre, 854 dead. 1921, Tulsa Massacre, where also where Black Wall Street was located. between 300 and 3,000 dead. And 1923, Rosewood, Florida, at least 150 dead. So when they say this is the last, this is the worst mass killing, history begs to differ. So I'm not going to talk about that tonight. I'm going to save that for a later show, but we're going to talk about Trump and Puerto Rico and the NFL. So we're going to talk about that. If you want to call in, call-in number is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. Then go ahead and play the commercial. I'm going to get back in this, and I am going to get those clips played for you. Because, you know, it's news, and we're going to talk about that. Also, we're going to talk about a little bit about Puerto Rico, but we're going to do that in just a second. So let's play the clip, the commercial. I'll be right back.
February of 1926, historian Carter G. Woodson launched Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month. On the Ant Canary Experience, we celebrate Black History 12 months a year. Hi, I'm Ant Canary, host of the Ant Canary Experience, the show for all things about our history, not his story. On the Experience, we also talk about current events that affect the black community in the country. So join me every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to get your weekly Black History lesson. You can listen live or call me at 563-999-3682. I talk about topics that schools are afraid to tell our children about. That's every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Please check out the Ant Canary Experience.
Okay, we're back. Let me give you a call and number just in case you didn't get it first time. I gotta apologize for my voice. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. And this is our weekly Trump Diss. Play this, I'll be right back.
U.S. President Donald Trump blamed the people of Puerto Rico for their suffering on Saturday, hurling criticism via Twitter towards the mayor of hurricane-hit San Juan, one day after she slammed Trump administration officials for saying the relief efforts were successful and were a, quote, good news story. Included in the tweets were use of racist stereotypes of Latinos, essentially calling Puerto Ricans lazy for not doing more for recovery efforts. The island nation has been devastated by Hurricane Maria and years of austerity. On Friday, the mayor of Puerto Rico pleaded for help.
We are dying here, and I cannot fathom the thought that the greatest nation in the world cannot figure out logistics for a small island of 100 miles by 35 miles long. FEMA asks for documentation. I think we've given them enough documentation. Look at this. Look at this. So I am asking the President of the United States to make sure somebody is in charge that is up to the task of saving lives. If anybody out there is listening to us, we are dying. and you are killing us with the inefficiency. And if we don't stop, and if we don't get the food and the water into people's hands, what we are going to see is something close to a genocide.
The Real News' Aaron Mate recently spoke to journalist Ed Morales, whose recent piece is titled Puerto Rico Needs Massive Emergency Aid and an End to Austerity.
Yeah, I mean, that's typical of what we've heard from the Trump administration so far. I mean, usually from Trump, and you know, he sounds like a used car salesman that is telling you that, you know, a car that is completely broken down is going to be a great car and it's going to be wonderful for your family. I mean, it's just the same thing over and over with him. And it's incredible how, you know, the American public allows or elected him or allows him to continue to operate in this fashion. But I guess we're just in a sort of a post-fact age or just an age of disconnection.
Right. Now, your piece for The Nation also calls for an end to austerity, arguing that the economic conditions that Puerto Rico faced before the storm helped worsen its impact. Why does Puerto Rico now need an end to austerity?
Well, you know, it could be argued that they needed an end to, I mean, people were arguing that people needed, that they needed an end to austerity before the hurricane, because the this purported objective of the Fiscal Oversight and Management Board, which it was enforced by the PROMESA Act, that bipartisan effort of Congress people passed, that purported purpose was not only to restructure the debt, but to get the economy going again. But, you know, the idea of getting the economy was going is not something that they tackle seriously. And most of the measures for at least the first year and probably the years after that were more designed to just extract, you know, more from the populace through levying more taxes, privatizing more services, so that and that would result in less money going to the government coffers, and cutting jobs. So you know, the island was going into a really bad situation economically, regardless. But you know, I think that the hurricane, I mean, I don't want to see it at all as a good thing, but it's almost making PROMESA meaningless or obsolete. I mean, even today, the head of the Fiscal Oversight Management Board said that they had to have a meeting so that they can reassess exactly what they were doing.
Okay. Excuse me. Excuse me for my voice. I'm sorry. Voice is letting me down. But the show must go on. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play the clips for you that I'm going to that I wanted to play last week, and grab your phone calls also. Chat room is also open also, so you try to do a few things at once, which is all good. But yeah, we're going to talk about this because there is some history, Trump and the NFL and all that good stuff. So, you know, like I said, players are still taking knees. People are still going to football games. People are still crying about it. And, hey, what you going to do? But why all of a sudden did he just jump on NFL players taking knees? Well, there is some history between him and the NFL. And I think, and a lot of people, other people think also, is that, you know, the one thing to do, you know, he likes this thing, us versus them. So now you've got people like me and other people that I know that support the players, who support the causes, going, you know, why they're taking the knee. And then you have people that want to twist it and put it on something that it's not even what the protest is about. And I've done shows, and I played the clip. I don't know how many times Kaepernick said what the protest was about. And all of a sudden, you get the people that don't like him doing it. They want to twist it and pretend that the players are disrespecting the flag and the military and all that kind of, and that's not even true. And people have already come out and said that's not even true. They still keep going on with the same nonsense. So it just gets to the point where you just, you know, there's no point of arguing with these people because they're not going to listen. So I just pretty much stop arguing with them. I get an argument. I was getting an argument every weekend, at least with one person on social media about this. But it just gets to the point, you just get tired of talking because, you know, people are going to believe what they want to believe. You can throw facts. You can throw all kinds of stuff at the people. And if they don't want to see it, they're not going to see it, you know. So it just gets to the point, it's, you know, it's kind of like if you have children, you know how it is arguing with the 2 or 3 year old. You keep on going until you turn purple, and it ain't going to solve a thing. So I just stop. You know, I just say, the hell with it. So the players are going to keep doing what they're doing. The ratings are going to go up. But at least the one good thing about all of this, at least the issue has been brought up. And now you had the shooting yesterday, and I just got a feeling that nothing's going to get done. I mean, if you can have somebody going into a school blowing away kids and nothing gets done, then there's no hope for this country as far as guns go. And I don't want to get too much into that because I'm going to save that for a later date, but I will say, you know, America has, and I've said it before, America has a affair with guns, and nothing's going to happen because the NRA has got too many people on the payroll. So until you get rid of them, nothing's going to happen. So what I'm going to do, I've got calls coming in, so what I'm going to do, I'm going to take the first call that comes in, that's in, and if you want, you can just give a little, trying to see if you've called before. If not, I'm glad you called. Just let you, you know, give your name, where you're calling from, and say what you want to say, and then we're going to go ahead and get these clips, and we'll be here until at least 10 o'clock. I'm probably not going to go any longer than 10 because my throat's not cooperating, unfortunately. So I'm going to grab, see the first caller that was here. Let me go ahead and get this button. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. Hello, caller. Can you hear me? Okay. I'll just leave the mic open. Let me grab the next call. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
How are you today?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing just beautiful.
Excuse me. Well, I lied. I'm not doing all that great. My throat is giving me issues. But other than that, I'm fine.
You know, you made remarks. And, you know, as you said before, I was supported Donald Trump and voted for him because I liked the issues he was speaking on. But I've heard people make mention about the days won't declare the shooting that went on in Nevada as a terrorist act. Well, it's really, here's two things that's going on. The United States State Department has identified terrorist countries and terrorist groups based on their definition. And that's their responsibility, or they've taken the responsibility to designate these countries and these groups. You know, like you had the shooting in Tennessee at the church in the last few weeks, where a Sudanese immigrant was doing the shooting. One person was killed and several was injured. You hardly hear anything about this. But the Sudan was on one of the travel ban list that this administration had put forth because of their inability or unwillingness to meet certain specifications as they make sure they know who it is that's coming into the country. So that's how countries are designated terrorists. Now, the other way is when a news source or an organization like the Southern Poverty Definition League, I may be wrong on that, Anti-Definition League, and you got the Southern Poverty, and I can't think the rest of that goes with their name, which is a Jewish organization. And they have been known to designate and call people terrorists. And guess who else has the ability to do that too? Your NAACP, Urban League, any organization can make reference to an action that was carried out by individuals and label them as terrorists, or people in the community that's under the siege of a lot of criminality can label what they see of those who are carrying out this criminality. They can label them as terrorists also. You kind of get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, but you never hear those later groups do that. You never hear those Vanguard organizations, the Urban League and NAACP, who could do that if they wanted to. They got just as much right as a news station. That's what a news station say is not federal law. You know another thing, too, on Puerto Rico, my heart goes out to those people that are suffering the way they are. But getting away from that, Puerto Rico, the debt that it's in, I don't think the federal government should pay their debt. Now, I know that they're coming up with some sort of finance restructuring for that island, for that possession. But as far as the federal government, other people in the country is picking up their debt, well, where in the world would that ever end? Should we pay the debt for Illinois, too, where if you have a winning lotto ticket for a while there, you couldn't get paid for it? Alaska has no problem running a balanced budget for its state. And there's other states in this nation that runs a balanced budget. Some states like Las Vegas, Nevada, and Vermont, and a few others, Florida, they don't even have taxes on personal income tax. Yet and still, they manage just fine. So I wish Puerto Rico well, but as far as the federal government picking up their debt, I'm totally against that. That's come from mismanagement or whatever else went on.
Okay. Let me grab this phone call, hit the button, hope this is through. Okay. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. Hello, caller. Can you hear me? Well, I'll leave the mics open. So let me play this. Let me play this first clip, just to give you a little bit of background on what we're talking about, what the topic is tonight. But what we'll probably do, probably around 9:30 after I played all the clips, we'll do a little bit more talking about a few other things. Like I said, I'm going to save some of the things that we're talking about, and I'm going to save them for a different show. But I'm going to get these. Stick to what we're going to talk about tonight until at least 9:30, and then we'll talk about a few different issues. So let me hit the button. Hopefully everything will work tonight. I got 5 clips to play for you. Get them off, and then we'll talk. All right. Let me give out the call-in number one more time. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682.
Hey, so my name's Jeff Perlman, and I'm an author, and I've been working for about a year now, a little less, on a book about the USFL, and that's the United States Football League, which lasted from 1983 to 1985, ultimately sued the NFL for antitrust violations, won $1 in the lawsuit, which was trebled to $3, went out of business. And I've been digging into this league for a long time now. Folders, hardcore. I've interviewed more than 400 people. Books upon books about the league. I've purchased almost every media guide. And I just want to explain real quickly why people tie Donald Trump to the USFL. So the USFL started in 1983, and there was an owner of the New Jersey Generals named J. Walter Duncan, who was an Oklahoman oil man. And he famously said, you know how you become a millionaire? Start as a billionaire and buy a football team. So he lasted 1 year, and then he sold the Generals. And a guy named Donald Trump came along, and he was a guy in his mid-30s, New York real estate guy, paid $10 million for the New Jersey Generals, way overpriced, but he wanted them. And he came into the league and, you know, initially said he was very excited and that he was going to do some great things and this is going to be awesome. And then at the very first owners meeting, he said, Well, I didn't enter this league to stay in the spring. We're moving to fall. Because I forgot to mention, USFL was a spring football league. That's what made it unique. It played in the spring, not in the fall. So it wasn't rivaling the NFL directly. Well, he says, we got to move to fall. And the other sort of, one of the other big owners in the USFL was a guy named John Bassett. His daughter was a famous tennis player. He was Canadian. And he happened to own a team long ago in the World Football League. And he knew about owning sports franchises. And his thing was, got to stay in spring. We can't take on the NFL. That'd be crazy. And Trump, no, no, no. We have to move to fall. We have to move to fall. Well, Trump confided in people that he wanted to move to fall because he wanted an NFL franchise. And the NFL had already rejected his bids to have an NFL team. In fact, they wanted nothing to do with him. He was new money. He was arrogant. He was brash. He came off horribly in person. So the NFL didn't want him. So he thought, here's what I'm going to do. And he expressed this to people. So this isn't a guess. I'm going to buy a USFL team. I'm going to load it with NFL talent. And we're going to become the New York team of the USFL. At the time, they played in the Meadowlands, but so did the Giants and Jets. So his plan was, we'll be absorbed into the USFL, into the NFL, and I'll either build a stadium in Manhattan. That was the ultimate plan, but I can start in Queens at Shea Stadium where the Jets once played. So that's his big thing. And he pushes owners to this idea of, we have to move to fall, we have to move to fall. And the thing about USFL owners is they were a largely gullible group. They weren't deep-pocketed guys like the NFL. A couple were, but most of them weren't. And they started getting very jittery after losing money the first season, then the second season, which, of course, as anyone knows, you lose money in pro sports at the beginning. It's just a guarantee, especially back then. You spend money to make money. After about 5 years, as was the original plan of the NFL, these guys would probably be making money. They had TV deals with ABC, with ESPN. The deals only ran for a couple years. They could renegotiate. The USFL was doing well, not across the board, but in many places. They were figuring themselves out. But Trump is saying in 1984, we have to move to the fall. We have to move to the fall. We're going to do this lawsuit. It's going to be amazing. Keep saying amazing, big, great. It's going to be awesome. And his hope and what he convinced a lot of the other owners was that eventually we're going to be able to move. We're going to move to fall. But really what's going to happen is the NFL is going to merge with us. And you guys are going to get rich because you're going to have NFL franchises. Well, here's the thing. More than 50% of the USFL's teams played in NFL cities. So you had the Houston Gamblers, for example. You had the Pittsburgh Maulers. You had the LA Express. I mean, you had tons of teams playing in NFL markets. Michigan Panthers. And it wasn't going to work. And they knew that. So all of a sudden, owners are scrambling. The owners of those teams are scrambling. They're going out of business. They're slashing. They're cutting the Michigan Panthers. They moved to Oakland to merge with the Invaders. It was a disaster. It already was a disaster. But Trump is saying, we have to move to fall. We have to move to fall. And the truth of the matter is, we didn't have to move to fall. He wanted to move to fall because he wanted an NFL team. That's it. That's the only reason he did it. He wanted an NFL team. And, of course, what happened was they sued the NFL. Trump insists the trial be in New York, that the lawsuit be filed in New York, which was a huge mistake because there was no sympathy for the USFL in New York. If they'd tried it in Houston, which a lot of the owners were begging, please, Houston, it would have had much greater chance of success. Also, he hired Harvey Meyerson as the lead attorney. Disaster, just a complete disaster. Ended up making a fool of himself on the stand. So the USFL actually won, but they won $1, which was trebled to $3. So they won $3, went out of business, of course. Donald Trump never got a franchise, later tried buying the Buffalo Bills. Nobody had any interest in that within the NFL. And what really bothers me and bothers, I've interviewed almost 400 people now from the league. And what bothers a lot of people is a couple years ago, there was a 30 for 30, a brilliant 30 for 30 about the USFL by a filmmaker named Mike Tolan. And he talked to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump dismissed it all as small potatoes. And when you talk to guys who played in the league, and you talk to cheerleaders, and you talk to GMs, and you talk to concession guys, and all these different people I've interviewed, that really rubbed them wrongly. Because for them, the USFL was a chance. It was a chance to play. It was a chance to extend their careers. It was the chance to live a dream. And the funny thing is, some of these guys are voting for Trump. It's not like all of them aren't. Some of them just hate Hillary Clinton. And some of them would never vote for Trump. But they all almost universally blame Donald Trump for the death of this league. And they say it was about greed, and it was about arrogance, and it was about the single-minded desire to have an NFL franchise. And anyone else, fuck them. It doesn't really matter because this is about him. Anyway, there's my breakdown of Donald Trump and the USFL. Feel free to ask me questions at angold22@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, that was one clip giving you information about his involvement with the USFL. And actually, I remember it because I'm a big football fan, and I was in high school at the time, and we some people may remember this, some people may not, but USFL was a spring league, which means they play their games in the springtime. NFL plays in the fall. So there was a time when we pretty much had wall-to-wall football in this country. And also there was college football going on at the same time. So you had spring football, you had college football in the middle, and then you had NFL. So if you loved football like I do, I mean, that you were in football heaven. I mean, that's just wall-to-wall football. I mean, that's football coming out of your ears. And this story, I still got a few more clips on this, but this story, you know, a lot of people may have forgotten about this. This was back in the day when he wasn't as well-known as he is now. And now, all of a sudden, you know, you got players taking a knee, nonviolent protests. There's nothing wrong with that. People like it, some people don't. Puts his two cents in, and then you got where we are today. Not this past Sunday, but the last Sunday, you know, it was just, that's all people talked about. And, you know, and it just seems like to me that, you know, the media plays into this too, because there was a time right around 2009, well, before 2009, the players did not even come out on the field. A lot of the stuff that they do today, they weren't doing this stuff. The giant flag, no, they weren't doing this stuff. The only time they really did the national anthem big was Super Bowl. They didn't do this at every game. They stayed in the locker room. They would have something going on the field before the game, and then the players would come out on the field, and then they'd play the game. So the military had this idea, and you can find, you know, stuff about this. You know, it's really a recruitment commercial for the military. That's why they come out there with the flags and the military men and all this kind of stuff. So now it's a big deal. But, you know, my thing is, you know, you want to settle it, stay inside the locker room until the anthem is played. Like I said, you don't have to play the anthem at start of every game. They weren't doing it before, and all of a sudden they're doing it because I just call it forced patriotism. You know, everybody doesn't think the same way. And so what you're trying to do is, you know, make people, you know, And same people that are mad about players taking knees and, you know, they twisted this around, the same people making a big deal about this, now all of a sudden, you know, what do they do when they're at home? They don't stand when they're at home. They don't stand in the sports bar. You know, they're sitting down on the couch getting something to eat. You know, now all of a sudden, you know, people want to get butthurt about it. So he may be doing this because he feels slighted. And matter of fact, he's got a lifetime ban from the NFL, which means he will never, never, ever, never, never, never own a team in the NFL. So maybe that's got a little bit something to do with it, you know, that he can never get a team. He wanted a team so bad that he can never get one. And two, a lot of the players that they had in the USFL – came to the NFL. Herschel Walker played for my Cowboys. First, he played for Minnesota and then played the Cowboys, you know. And a lot of other players played USFL, came over to the NFL. So, you know, you wanted to sue, they sued, they won. They won $3. Actually, you can go online and find the actual check. Really, it's $3 and some change. I think it's $3.76, something like that. And the 76 cent is interest because it sat for like 3 years after the verdict came down. So it had interest. So the interest was like 75, 76 cents. So they had to actually write a check. and right after that they folded. So what could have been something decent, not anymore. So we're going to play the next clip, and this gives just a little bit more information about his involvement in the USFL.
Welcome to the sixth part in a multi-part series focused on Donald Trump truths. This series provides all the answers as to why Donald Trump is a horrible choice for president. This time, we look at Trump's disastrous ownership of the New Jersey Generals, part of the USFL, the short-lived springtime football league. Welcome to the Jono Show. Before Trump made his way down to Atlantic City, he aspired to own an NFL football team. But the league wasn't interested in his participation. Even most recently, Trump tried to buy the Buffalo Bills, but the Sabres owner outbid him with a price of $1.4 billion. Trump's foray into the world of sports has been notoriously blotted with disappointment. He held several big fights at the Trump Plaza in Atlantic City until that casino closed. He operates 17 golf courses around the world, but the PGA refuses to hold events in his location because of Trump's comments about Mexican immigrants. And his golf club in Puerto Rico just filed for bankruptcy. But it was back in early 1980s when an eager Trump bought the franchise to the New Jersey Generals, a team within the United States Football League, the USFL. The first season of the USFL saw a $20 million contract with ABC Sports and another lucrative deal with then-startup cable channel ESPN. The ratings were decent and attendance was fair. The 12 teams averaged just over 25,000 people per game, and the league was marketed as the Fun League, unlike the NFL, because players at the USFL were encouraged to celebrate touchdowns. But as soon as Trump owned the team, he started bashing it for being a springtime event and tried to move it quickly to the fall. He provided quotes like, "If God had wanted football in the spring, he wouldn't have created baseball," and saying that spring football was for losers. John Bassett, owner of the USFL team in the Tampa Bay Bandits, warned Trump that an attempt to move the games to the fall would have apocalyptic repercussions. Sure enough, though, by 1986, Trump had enough USFL owners in his pocket to gain a 12-2 vote to move the games to a fall schedule. But Trump's next move would seal the fate of the USFL forever. With Roy Cohn by his side, Trump announced a $1.7 billion antitrust lawsuit against the NFL, claiming they had a chokehold on national TV rights. The trial lasted 42 days and ended with a jury ruling in favor of the USFL, declaring the NFL a monopoly. Sounds great for Trump, right? Guess again, because during the trial, the NFL exposed Trump's real plan to force a merger, get even richer, and acquire an NFL franchise for virtually nothing. It was exposed that the USFL was a league controlled and dominated solely by one man, Donald Trump, and that he alone orchestrated the trial to make a financial killing. In turn, the jury decided that because the USFL wasn't playing at the time of the lawsuit, and more importantly, that the expenditures the USFL laid out in order to compete with the NFL contributed to the USFL's own demise. The jury concluded that the league's dire straits were largely a result of its own doing, not the NFL's, and so awarded the USFL damages totaling $1. Since damages in antitrust cases tripled, the award grew to a whopping $3. The USFL appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, which took four more years and resulted in the higher court allowing the award to stand, plus interest, requiring the NFL write a check to the USFL for $3.76. Of course, since the NFL did lose, they legitimately had to pay the USFL attorney fees, which meant Roy Cohn and lawyer Harvey Meyerstein had a payday to the tune of $6 million. But the USFL never played again. Some good did come out of all of this. After the league folded, 187 players moved over to the NFL, And because of the competition from the USFL, salaries tripled within 3 years. If you want to find out more about how Donald Trump's ego destroyed the lives of many investors and ruined an entire franchise, there's a great documentary on Netflix called Small Potatoes, Who Killed the USFL? The documentary name comes from Trump's response when asked to give an interview many years later, calling the USFL Small Potatoes. It's a fascinating look into Trump's greed and ego that leads to the downfall and unemployment of so many that were dedicated to a new football league. Hey, if this is your first time here, please.
Okay. And I have yet to see that documentary. I'm going to look for it probably this weekend, see if I can find it. Because ESPN did a special 30 for 30 on the USFL, which is pretty good. If you hadn't seen that, check it out. It's really good. So you would think that, you know, after all this time gone by, this was in the early 80s, you know, it is now what it is.
You know,
at Bridge, yeah.
I'm glad that team folded. And the New York Yankees are too. When you talk to everybody from Steinbrenner, Derek Jeter, Reggie Jackson, former Yankees, they all was crazy about Trump. It still is. And the reason I'm glad that we have football in the fall is because I'm a baseball trainer. I train baseball, young baseball players. And Major League Baseball has created this program called the RBI program, Revitalizing Baseball in the Inner Cities. And what we have coaches on football teams that entice their players to come out and start practicing as early as in June. And they're missing out on participating in other sports. Same thing you see with basketball players too, but basketball teams. But, you know, in the wintertime, basketball players don't have any other sport to gravitate to. But you have these football coaches that don't want players playing baseball or even running track. And we have that here, that concern here. So, no, I'm happy that the team league went by the wayside just for that particular reason. Is that, you know, even Major League Baseball, I believe, recently made comments on the lack of African Americans in the sport. Back in the 1970s, Dr. Edwards, who was very outspoken on issues of sports, he was making comments about the percentages of African Americans that was in baseball, upwards of over 60-65%. But now, that's probably, if it's 2%, that's a lot. So, I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay. Okay. Ooh, my throat. Okay. I'm going to play clip number 3, and this is a little bit longer clip. But I'm going to play this clip. Oh, let me give out the call-in number again. 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. Play this clip. And be right back.
Thank you so much. Let's talk more about this now, about this league-wide NFL demonstration today. Joining me right now to discuss this, Michael Eric Dyson, a sociology professor at Georgetown University and author of the book Tears We Cannot Stop. Also with me, CNN political commentator Ben Ferguson. Thanks so much to both of you gentlemen for joining me. So, Michael, you first. How do you interpret all that is unfolding?
Well, I think, Fred, first of all, that it indicates that these players understand that they were deeply and profoundly insulted by the President of the United States of America. So in order to protect the integrity of their game, they felt they had no choice but to lock arms and lock aims with those players who have already understood that this is bigger than a protest about a flag. It's not about a national anthem or the flag. It was primarily Colin Kaepernick's response was to black people who were unarmed being shot down in the streets by police, and asking the criminal justice system to be held accountable. That resulted in his taking a knee during the national anthem because it did not signify the full acceptance of African American people in this country. So now, with the insult that the president delivered on, I think, Friday night, the rest of the league got in order, so to speak, and understood this is something that not only hurts those particular players of color, this hurts the game, this hurts the nation, and now they have forged connections in a way that couldn't have been anticipated. So I think unintentionally, Donald Trump has really forged a real solidarity among many of those players who understand that these issues transcend sports, and we can't have the bully pulpit of the President of the United States of America attempting to control the actions of private citizens.
So then I wonder, you know, the president has said this is an issue of respecting America, respecting the flag, respecting, military vets, and that kneeling is disrespectful.
No.
But now that the franchise, right, nearly overall, has come out with this statement today, locking arms, kneeling, hands on each other's shoulders, right, has that changed the message now of the intent behind kneeling? Has it changed the dialogue, the message?
I can't speak for the players. They're the ones that are going to have to decide if this is them just jumping on a bandwagon, which I think a lot of them actually are, because they saw an easy chance to go after Donald Trump, who it's very clear that many of them don't like. But let's be clear about where this started. You have a guy in Colin Kaepernick that wore socks that depicted police officers in this country as pigs. A guy that also wore shirts honoring Fidel Castro. I have a hard time being lectured from a guy that says that he's standing up for police brutality when he supports a guy that's been brutal to all of his people as a dictator in Fidel Castro, and refers to the police, all police, and wears socks depicting them as pigs in general statements. I also have a hard time respecting a guy who acts like he's some sort of justice warrior when he didn't even spend the time to register to vote, didn't even vote in the last election. To our knowledge, he's still not even registered to vote. So I would say to all the NFL owners and all the NFL players that are jumping on the Colin Kaepernick is somehow a victim bandwagon, even though he opted out of his own contract, look at where this all started. Look at who started this protest. Look at what Colin Kaepernick is. He's an empty suit who went out there and decided, I'm going to kneel during the national anthem, when he didn't even have the guts to vote in an election, and he praises Fidel Castro, who has brutalized and beaten and murdered his own people, and then refers to the police as pigs by wearing clothes.
Well, let me say this.
Michael.
Yeah, let me respond to that. First of all, black people were wearing the uniform of the United States of America, returned home from World War II as veterans, and were murdered by white supremacists, bigots, who denied the legitimacy and repudiated. Let me finish, sir. I didn't interrupt you. Repudiated their American identity. Let me finish. So what I'm saying to you is that those people who committed those heinous acts, of course, were un-American, were not patriots, and didn't understand the complicated nature of black people's relationship to a country that we have often stood proudly for, a flag that did not protect us. So you can name legitimate flaws in Colin Kaepernick's approach without undercutting the basic moral trajectory of what he's saying, because it's bigger than Colin Kaepernick. You can discount Colin Kaepernick, and the fact is, unarmed black people still die in disproportionate numbers from police people. The facts that he was highlighting and underscoring are still real today. So we can discount Colin Kaepernick altogether and still say that the issues that he highlighted and that he confronts must be dealt with, and those owners,
Michael,
have had a
Michael,
reckoning with themselves
question.
In a very serious and fundamental
let
fashion,
me ask you a question.
And then joining themselves with others who do the same
Michael,
thing.
I think that represents
progress.
Michael, let me just ask you one question. Do you not find it a little bit of hypocrisy that the majority of these players, until Donald Trump said what he said the other night about respecting this country, had not gotten involved off the field? The majority of them, and you may know a stat on this. I would love to know how many of the players that are kneeling and how many of the players that were in the locker room today refusing to come out and actually agree that this is the greatest country in the world, and that we should honor those who have fought to protect and defend our freedoms, who have fought and given the ultimate sacrifices of all races. How many of them do you actually think are even Yeah, seriously, how many of them do you actually think are even
But I wonder, Ben, are you conflating different issues? Is this an issue of choice? I mean, that one player decided to...
But let me even answer that
question. That one player decided to take this approach does not necessarily mean that all, you know, players have to take the same approach. Go ahead, Michael.
Exactly. Well, here's the point, too. First of all, we can never determine when people will buy in to an understanding of the politics of their culture. Look, mothers who have their sons get killed in foreign theaters of war then become, if you will, radicalized in a positive way, and they become activists against some of the things that they find problematic with the military.
Many of them do not.
Let me finish. Do not equate the fact that people die for that flag on foreign theaters of war with the fact that what they die for is the right for people in America to be able to voice their opinions. It is not disrespectful because, first of all, soldiers are not the only people who stand up for that flag. Number two, many soldiers came out in defense of Colin Kaepernick.
Right,
let me finish,
it.
Sir. Many people, I didn't interrupt you, many people came out in defense who fought in the foreign wars and who fought it for America, came out and said that what Colin Kaepernick is doing is right, and then many police people support Colin Kaepernick for what he's doing. So all I'm saying to you, you do not have a copyright on veterans in this country who have done valiant valiantly fought in this country, do not have a copyright so that Martin Luther King Jr. never fought a day in a foreign war,
Fred,
but was one of the greatest Americans we produce. We cannot reduce the complication of patriotism to the fact that you fought in a foreign war.
Michael,
we
Michael,
who love this country
now, okay?
On this side
I heard what you
have
said.
To
let me
also
say this.
Be defended as well.
I find it interesting that you want to somehow act as if there's a bunch of veterans are on your side. There was one veteran today in the NFL who is the only player that understood that the American flag is bigger than any football player, and he walked out of that locker room and stood there by himself when he was sitting there with the Steelers. The rest of his team, in my opinion, are a bunch of cowards who stayed in that locker room and don't even fully understand what exactly this is all about, except for the fact they said, oh, I'm going to jump on this bandwagon. Did they vote? Are they registered to vote? Have they been socially active on these issues? Go back and look at these teams and tell me how many of them have
right is right and wrong is wrong. It doesn't make a difference.
That was a demonstration of choice, is it not? I mean, the team is allowing, the team has said it was allowing players to make the choice whether they wanted to go out there or whether they didn't.
But look at the NFL right now. The NFL stands up today, and these owners stand up next to their players, and they act like they're doing some grand work. This is a league that's incredibly flawed, a league that helps cover up when many of their players have physically abused and assaulted and beaten their wives and girlfriends who have kept them in the league, and minimize what they do when they literally beat their wives and beat their girlfriends, and now they come out on some, acting like they're on some moral high ground as if they're some moral club here.
You're making my point for me. You're making my point for me.
Go ahead,
Here's a league that has allowed that kind of thing to go on, and yet those players have been allowed to play, but a man who is engaged in peaceful protest, doing nothing more to take a knee so that people can rise upon the voice that he articulates for them, the platform he provides for them, they are then demonized, stigmatized, and then he is run up, blackballed out of the league. Here's a guy. Let me finish. Here's a guy who is who plays well enough right now to be starting ahead of at least 8 quarterbacks in this league. And the quarterback play so. Let me finish. The quarterback play so far in this league has been horrible. Colin Kaepernick's services can be caught on. He was blackballed. This has shifted the dialogue and the debate. Now that even many white players, because the NFL is 69.7% black. Let me finish. 69.7% black. The ownership is primarily white. So what we see now here is that there is a coming, perhaps, together closer to understand that those players on the gridiron are African American. They see their brothers and sisters getting killed every day, and they want to make a statement. They don't have to register to vote. They don't have to be involved in a formal political atmosphere. What they have to be are black people who understand the plight of other black people, and that offends people who don't understand the need to love and protect blackness in America.
You have an opinion. This is my opinion. These players, if they truly care as much as they're claiming, and this isn't just I'm going to jump on the bandwagon today moment, then go register to vote.
You know what? That's your way of doing it. There are multiple ways of protest, sir.
Well,
that's one of them.
It's a pretty lame way of protesting
by
when
not
you don't care
registering
enough to vote
to vote. I disagree with that. My
if you're
point
being,
simply
if
is
you're
this.
Being oppressed,
you cannot, as a person who's not a victim of white supremacy and of police brutality, you cannot dictate to those who are its victims how to respond and how to behave and act, sir. You cannot make those determinations.
Relax. It's called an opinion.
I don't
you
have to relax.
One, have
I'm highly
one.
Articulate in the midst of emotional articulation because I understand the joining of both passion and intellect. Sir, deal with that.
Well,
the fundamental issue is we have to understand the need to express our outrage against injustice wherever it happens. These young men and women have very powerful platforms that allows them to express an issue that the masses of black people
again,
have been concerned about.
This is
not simple.
True.
There's nothing simple about this. This is deep-rooted and very emotional. And while there are still so much on that topic that I do want to ask you all about, we also have just learned now, as it pertains to ongoing investigations involving the White House, now we have learned that the White House senior advisor, Jared Kushner, has used a private email account on occasion to correspond with other administration officials. His lawyer, you know, put out this statement just moments ago. Mr. Kushner uses his White House email address to conduct White House business. Fewer than 100 emails from January through August were either sent to or returned by Mr. Kushner to colleagues in the White House from his personal email account. These usually forwarded news articles or political commentary and most often occurred when someone initiated the exchange by sending an email to his personal rather than his White House address. End quote. This, of course, coming after Hillary Clinton's use of private email server for all of her work as Secretary of State was heavily criticized during the campaign and beyond, of course, testifying on the Hill for multiple hours. So, Ben, let me ask you about this reported, you know, hypocrisy now on the use of a private email versus a secured, you know, government email. Again, you know, he is a senior advisor. He has, you know, special clearance and security access. So, Ben, what's your point?
Okay. So that kind of ended on something that we're not talking about. But
I'd like to make a comment on that.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that Eric Dyson was totally overblown. He practically said that blacks don't need to. I'm saying blacks because he's talking about the players. Most 7% of them black. I don't know about the white players. They probably too, maybe. Don't need to vote. In this country, your vote controls your politicians. Your politicians control your police. I think I told you last week in Ferguson, they had an election for mayor this past summer where Mayor Knowles, the longstanding mayor there in Ferguson, he was reelected in a city that's predominantly black. You know why? Because blacks wouldn't come out to vote. And Mr. Kaepernick, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if he's registered or not, but if you're going to affect the change, and if you're looking at police actions, and I've said always that the community got the control over their employees, and I was talking to a retired black woman today as I waited in Firestone for my car to be prepared. She said that police brutality is not what she worried about in her community. But anyway, people have a right to protest for whatever it is that they see as a problem. As I said, another thing, too, y'all, and it was making reference about the NFL, this, that, and the other. NFL has a very, very loose policy on drugs. They check the players for steroids, but they don't check them for marijuana use. And I think you would agree with that because that has been brought up. So you think they're going to start from coming under pressure, they're going to start checking them for the use of something like marijuana? I'm just asking.
I'm guessing maybe but I'm not sure, because I think there was I don't have it in front of me, but I think they got there was one guy that they busted for what do they call it, PEDs, because I think he took some kind of supplement. And I think the story that I heard, I think he didn't know that it had some kind of product in it that would show up on the test, and he got busted for it.
But that's not marijuana, though.
Right.
That's not marijuana. Players get tested, and they got marijuana in their system. They have to pay, you know, they have to face the repercussions. So you got marijuana. You got the usage of the N-word on the field. You wouldn't allow that in any other sports arena. I mean, people would holler about it. I mean, the NAACP was talking about, let's bury the N-word. You know how they criticize the rappers for using N-words in the lyrics of their song?
Well, that's going to be
a lot of hypocrisy going on. Huh?
And impossible, dude, as far as, you know, the N-word goes. The only way they're going to – I've done a show on this a while ago. I don't think there's no way that they're going to – get rid of that word. I mean, it's impossible. It's impossible. And the thing that that when I did the show, that this was back when there was a big controversy about it, because there were actually white people, in my opinion, begging to say the word. And my whole thing on this it's simple. If they want to say the word, let them say it. But they need to remember that if they say it, if the wrong person hears you saying it, and, you know, hey, you get in a fight or whatever, that's on you. I mean, you know, because, I mean, there's two versions of it. One that ends in A and the one that ends in ER. And white people created the word. And now all of a sudden they want to use it.
Well, actually the word Negro – well, nigger means black in Spanish.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying.
Spanish, yeah.
But
I mean, if they want to say it, they can say it. I mean, you know, but my thing is there are consequences and repercussions. And that's all, you know, and I get on my son because he says it. And I get on him, mm-hmm. like, you know, say something else. You know, there are a lot of other words that you can say besides saying that. I try not to use it, and I have used it before, but I've used it in a way that, you know, around my friends, you know, I've used other words too, and I got mad at somebody, which has been a long time ago, but these young people, they hear it all the time, and it's in these songs that they listen to, and, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, the thing is, well, if they can say it, then why can't I say it? Hey, say it if you want to.
Yeah.
But you better be careful. You better be careful where you say it, and you better be careful about the people that are around you when you do use that word.
Absolutely. I would just point out how people are jumping down President Trump, and I really, that don't bother me. Like I told you before, my issues is with that administration is the issues that he put forth in the campaign. And it looked like he's trying to address all those issues, from the appointment of Gorsuch, the Supreme Court judge. And they worked twice to try to do something with that ratchet insurance plan. He did eliminate the mandate. So if you turn in your, to my understanding, if you turn in your tax return, if you don't have indicated that you do have insurance, IRS can't send it back. They got to take it. So effectively, you know, people ain't mandated to get involved in something that they otherwise wouldn't get involved with. And I think that if it's really attractive and formidable, people would rush to get involved in it, myself.
Well, I think I would say about Obamacare, I mean, they've had 8 years to get rid of it. I mean, it's broke. It ain't perfect. But, I mean, the plan that they have would just be worse. I mean, there are a lot of things that can.
Oh, no, that goes back to the states. Let the states take care of those things. Just like the state of Illinois, the legislature voted to let women who want to have abortions, and the state Medicaid can pay for it. You can't pay for it with federal portion of Medicaid, but the state Medicaid can pay for it. But that's the state of Illinois. That's what they want to do. Missouri wouldn't do that. And I don't think Georgia would, Louisiana would do that. So let it go to the states. Why should the entire nation be forced to pay for something? That's why people live in different states. They move. Nevada is a good state because it doesn't have income on your taxes on your personal income as Florida. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I used to work at a hospital, and the thing is, with these hospitals, people, when they get sick, if they don't have insurance, they will use the emergency room to get treatment. And then what the emergency room is going to do, they're going to send these people a bill, and a lot of these people do not pay their bills, so who ends up paying the bills are the people that are on insurance, that have their own insurance, because the insurance companies, which I think a lot of them are greedy as hell anyway, they'll just jack up the premiums and then have us cover the cost. So it makes a whole lot of sense to me that if everybody has their own insurance, if you get sick, you have a doctor, you go to your doctor, you let your doctor take care of you. A lot of preventive stuff, I'm kind of slacked off, but I need to do it. I was getting checkups every year, getting everything mm-hmm. done, make sure I'm good. I'm good, but, you know, and I'm not putting that on anybody else. That's on me. So if everybody has access to a doctor and, you know, and then if you go to the doctor and the doctor finds out there's something wrong with you, you can go ahead and do what you got to do to take care of your problem, and we're not paying for it.
You know the issue with the insurance in emergency room. Hospitals provide that type of service because they get to write that off against their gross income. That's what that goes. The Jewish complex here, I think they wrote off I don't know how many tens of millions of dollars, but they get to write that service off. The cost of that service against their gross income. That's some agreement that they have, a charitable agreement, service that they're providing.
Okay. I've got one more clip.
That was pretty good clips, by the way. But I really don't care for Dyson because he seems like he's trying to put himself in the position of being a quote-unquote leader of black people. I have a problem with that because all black folks are not the same. All black people, you had preachers that didn't want King to come to their city. And you know you surely had the same similarity with Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam. It still exists today. So you have people who like things, people who don't like things. And I think that's good. And I detest when someone tries to lump everybody because of some phenotypical similarities into one bunch. Let's listen to that clip.
I actually don't think that we're going to have like a black leader, because, you know, who would that be? I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, we're never going to have another Dr. King. We're never going to have another Malcolm X. So, like, people, you know, think that we should have some one person leading the rest of it. I don't think that's going to happen, because I can't think of anybody right top of my head that, you know, everybody would agree with doing that type of thing. So I don't think that's going to happen at all. excuse me. Oh, my throat is really bugging. I'm going to play this last clip. let me see what it is. Oh, and this is a clip, Shannon Sharp. And I like Shannon Sharp, because he does what I try to do on the show, and that is just to give you the facts, not to sugarcoat nothing, not to pussyfoot around or whatever. Just give the facts about what I'm talking about. And I don't claim to know everything, that I don't know everything, but I know what I know. And when I pick a topic, I research it, and I try to give out as truthful as I can about what I'm talking about. Shannon Sharp does the same thing. I mean, you can get on YouTube and find a lot of his clips different subjects he talks about, and the guy's on point. I'm telling you. I mean, this guy knows what he's talking about. I'm going to play this last clip. And while it's playing, I'm going to debate whether or not I'm going to go up to 10, or I may just cut it short, because it's hard to do a talk show when you can't talk. So let me play this clip, and I'll be right back.
The 7,000 537 things that President Trump has said in the last 50 years, him calling an NFL player an SOB is what brought the NFL, the owners, and its players together. And while some might be moved by the conscience of these NFL owners, it wasn't their conscience that moved them. It was the cash. Because, see, Skip, what we know about people with money, they don't like being told what to do. They don't like being bullied. You see, President Trump has bullied a lot of people. The very first thing that he uttered as he strolled down that escalator 2.5 years ago, he said, Mexico is sending us their worst, murderers, rapists, and drug dealers. That didn't shock the conscience of the NFL's owners. Him offending Gold Star families, nope. Him calling Rosie O'Donnell a pig. Him on the Access Hollywood talking about grabbing hoo-ha. That did not shock the very conscience of 7 NFL owners. Skip, allow me a second to name those guys. One, Daniel Snyder, the guys on your monitor. Mm-hmm. Jerry Jones. Mr. Bob Kraft. McNair, Houston Texans. Woody Johnson. Shad Khan. They gave $1 million for the inauguration of President Trump. And now they seem to be shocked. Every author that's written a book about President Trump, and they started writing books about him in the 1980s, they say he is exactly today as he was then. Sure. So that is all I want to say about him. Skip. Now what has happened, because what he said in Alabama, play into it, you know what happens in Alabama, Skip. There's something that's going on in America right now that's more valuable than Google and Apple stock. It's more valuable than gold and Bitcoin. It's called race. It's very valuable. And President Trump, he understands that. But Skip, now I'm unimpressed because this wasn't a protest. This was unity. So what are we showing solidarity against, Skip? We're showing solidarity because President Trump, he challenged the very men, wealthy, wealthy men, billionaires, and he told them what you should do if someone protests, you should fire them. They don't like what being told what to do, Skip. And then, Skip, he called a player that protested the anthem, he called them SOBs. Think about that now. He called them SOBs. That's what got the owners. That's what got the players to unite. Is that the worst that he's ever said? Absolutely not. Never called Vladimir Putin an SOB. Never called Erdogan or Turk an SOB. Even those men that walked down the street in Charlottesville, Virginia, Skip, carrying the tiki lights, hollering what they were hollering, inciting violence. He never said SOB. As a matter of fact, Skip, he said there were some good people in that group. What has transpired, Skip, again? Because what were they uniting against? It's almost like they were uniting against Colin Kaepernick's right for free speech. That's not what Colin Kaepernick was talking about. It's almost like they're uniting against you trying to attack us. Because, see, what happened, Skip, when he was from the bully pulpit, when he was cast looking down upon everybody else, the owners never had a problem with that. It wasn't until he came for the NFL that their conscience was shocked. How dare you tell us what we should do? You think you can tell us that we should fire somebody? Because remember, they said First Amendment. Here we are, 14 months after Colin Kaepernick originally kneeled. Mm-hmm. And when they asked him, he said, it's not about the flag. It's not about the veterans. It's not about the police. It's about the brutality that unarmed men and women of color are suffering. It's about the injustices. It's about the inequities that's going on in America. That's what he said. And still, we talk about the freedom of speech, and all these teams released these statements saying how divisive. Only the Seattle Seahawks touched on what the real issue was. And the problem that I have, Skip, is that these guys, some of them, and I'm very disappointed, and a few I'd like to say, I'm very disappointed in one of my very best friends, Ray Lewis. Mm. Ray Lewis sat in that chair right there and said that he could never kneel. He could never not stand for the national anthem because so many people died, and he had family members to fight for this country, and the opportunity and the flag means so much to him. And he kneeled, not on one knee, on both knees. Okay. So what were you kneeling for? You kneeled? You showed solidarity because of what President Trump said? And when Colin Kaepernick is trying to draw attention to the injustices going on, you deem that inappropriate? LaShawn McCoy, you remember what you said about a month ago about Colin Kaepernick? Not only were you kneeling, you were stretching. You were even worse than kneeling. The hypocrisy. And that's what I find so ironic about this, Skip. The very people that said they could never, ever kneel. Some people, I like Tom Brady. Tom Brady said, I'm not going to touch it. I prefer you do that. But these, all of a sudden, what are you unifying against? Are you showing unity? Are you showing solidarity against racism or the injustices that's in this country? Or are you showing solidarity against President Trump and what he said? His attack on the very NFL, the Shield, because what we know about above all else, those 32 men and the commissioner will protect that NFL Shield at all costs against all foreign and domestic. Mm. President Trump had to find that out the hard way. They've allowed him to attack so many groups in America. It wasn't until he came for one of 32 and the 1,600 men, and only a handful of them, Skip, have ever nailed in protest.
Yep.
And he called them an SOB,
mm-hmm.
and that shocked the conscience. Skip, not grabbing the axe as Hollywood Joy. That didn't shock anybody. He offended a gold star, a family that lost a son fighting for this country. He called John McCain a loser because he was captured. John McCain was a POW in Vietnam. He refused to come home until everybody came home. NFL didn't say a word. Nobody locked arms. So what are we uniting against? What are we standing for now? If that is what it took, what he said, if that what shocked your conscience, if that what made you choose to unite, so be it. But there's a bigger issue, and the issue is the racism and the injustices in America, in which Colin Kaepernick took a knee for in the beginning, and only Martellus and Michael Bennett and Malcolm Jenkins and a handful still understand what the issues are.
Okay. Excuse me. That's going to be the last clip of the night. Because it seems like my voice.
I got comments on that one, too.
Excuse me. Okay.
Rest your voice for a second. You see how.
What I'm going
to. You see. Oh, yeah. Get
okay,
some lemon or something. That'll help you. You probably got upper respiratory infection that's probably coming on.
I think I get this every time that the seasons change. I was
absolutely.
So happy with summer, now that fall is here, and all of a sudden, I get this humongous frog in my throat. So,
yeah, I have this.
Yeah.
Every now and then.
Oh man!
But you listen to what he said. I mean, and not to be attacking this person, but he's mixing words in a lot of jumble. Let's talk about what he said, Ray Lewis. The kneel, you say Kaepernick got on one knee, he kneeled. Ray Lewis, if I'm saying his last name right, he got on both knees. That's not kneeling. Lewis said he was praying. All right, you took that away from him. Let's look at John McCain. You go back in history on Trump about what he done before he was president, right? You hear that all the time about his father, even blaming his father. But now you use John McCain as a talking point to go against Trump. Well, why not go back in history on John McCain when he refused to honor and didn't want to have a Martin Luther King holiday, a national holiday? You see the hypocrisy in some of these comments that these people be making. It's rather than looking at the policies that's coming out of the administration, we want to look at the person and attack them personally. But, I mean, people got a right to do that. That's what they want to do. And another point, he did not call players SOBs. He gave a scenario. We talked about that last week. He said, what if a player disrespected the flag. And he was speaking to a large group in Huntsville, Alabama. They didn't have no problem with it. So maybe it's the environment that he was in that he chose to say the things the way he done. Now, nobody says nothing when Joe Biden goes into a environment of the NAACP or a black church and talk about they're going to put you back in slavery, right? I think Hillary Clinton talked about making them, we must make them heal, right? Or made some other mentions about somebody being terrorists or thugs. I'm not sure. I might be saying this wrong. Somebody correct me if they know. But nobody talks about those things. But we want to jump on this man, and which is, people got a right to do it. I'm going to say it every time. And bring up all sorts of far-fetched occurrences that happened back in time, and I tried to apply them to make a talking point today. Really disingenuous.
Well, I will say this before my voice absolutely leaves me. I will say this about him. He is who he is. He showed who he was, and people still voted for him anyway. I can't remember the exact quote that Maya Angelou said, something like, you know, he showed us who he was, we saw it, and we got it. Excuse me. But like,
well,
I said before,
that can apply to any of them, you know, to really want to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's another point. If those football team owners were so aggravated about what Trump said, well, why didn't they say, well, we're going to show him. We're going to hire Colin Kaepernick. Have they hired him? Nope. So we have to wonder, what's the underlying reason that they done what they done? I think they done it because they said, we want to hurry up and get this over with until the next contractual negotiations come about at the end of these team contracts or with the league. And we're going to put in these contracts how the things that we're discussing and being confronted with today, right now, and to make sure that we don't have to deal with this in the future. That's what I think is going to happen.
Okay, well, I'm going to bring this to an end 30 minutes early because I can't be.
Why don't you go take care of yourself?
I can't be an effective talk show host when I can't even talk, unfortunately. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to thank everybody, as usual, for calling and all that good stuff and for listening. And next week, I promise you, I will be over this and I'll be able to talk. So I will take it all the way to regular time. But I do apologize for this. This happens to me every year when the season change. And then, too, I may have a problem because it seems like every year in around December or January, I get a case of laryngitis for about a week. And it happens to me every year. I don't know why. So I may have that issue to deal with later on in the year. But tonight I've got a humongous frog in my throat, and I feel like I'm not giving everybody 100% when I can't even talk to you. So I'm going to go ahead and take care of this, and I'm going to cut the show short. But I did want to get out everything that I promised to talk about tonight, along with a few other things. And I will be back next week. Chat room will be open. Oh, and let me say this. The chat room, my favorite person is on the chat room, Suzette. I just want to give her a shout out. Hi, Suzette. I see you. Well, I see your name. I don't actually see you, but I see you. And and like I said, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to get myself together and get rid of this frog. But I will be back next Tuesday with another topic, and hopefully I'll be able to speak to you. So with that, I'm gonna end it short, unfortunately, but I will be back, and I will talk to you next week. Be good. Peace out, everybody.